the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 176 of the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available, as always, on iTunes and at NFL.com/Shek, S-H-E-K. Good show lined up for you. We have from around the league, Dan Hans, who's coming in here. Fantasy guru, the Hall of Famer himself, Michael Fabiano, coming in here. We're going to talk some NFC East and AFC West. But we had the opportunity to grab our pal Darren Sharper, and I want to talk about this Riley Cooper stuff. So we're going to start the show with that. And by the way, before we jump into that ugly subject, a quick little self-promotion here. Go on to NFL.com, and our pal Warren Sapp is getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, as you know, later on on Sunday. Or no, he gets inducted on Saturday, then the game's on Sunday. Either way, he jumped into the sports car with me. That's available for you. We took a spin around Culver City. We talked about this, that, and the other, including what exactly he and Brett Favre were talking about when they were yapping at each other.
Is this a real sports car that you're driving around in?
No, it's sports car. What makes it sportsy is are the guys who I bring into it.
Okay.
When do you get? Well, here he is, everybody. You watched him play. You saw him win a Super Bowl with those Saints not very long ago. Yeah, we have a picture of it here in Studio 66.
That should be a picture of the pick.
Maybe, yeah, or maybe that is a picture of the pick, that's you, because I see Roman Harper back there in the background as Peyton Manning throws the ball in that Super Bowl. Maybe Darren Sharper knocks his pass down there.
No, I did not.
Did you play a good game in that one?
Average.
Really?
Yeah, average. I was actually just hoping that game could go as fast as it possibly could, because I just wanted to win. I was kind of ailing. You know, I had knee surgery after the game, about a month after that season.
Huh.
And I just wanted to win. And I was just like, from the entire year was so long and so much energy was put into that season, I was just like, just exhausted. And I just wanted that game to be over. So when Tracy got that interception, I wasn't thanking him because we were pretty much locked to win that game. It was like, thank you. I could kind of relax now and take an exhale, because I was worn out. Body was beat up.
That's interesting. You know what, Black Tie? Start the music. Let's jump into it. If we're talking about behind the scenes of the Super Bowl, I want to get the players' opinion on other things. It's time for the latest edition of Inside Out.
This is Inside Out.
Tell it like it is. Tell it like it is. Tell it like it is.
See, Inside Out, Darren Sharper, as you know, I have my thoughts, my hypotheses. There are myths out there among the fans, but you as a player can debunk them or validate them. That's what Inside Out's all about. Let's talk about that Super Bowl a little bit. In the 2 weeks leading up to the game, did you guys say, listen, Peyton Manning, there's all this mystique and so on and so forth, but the fact of the matter is, in big games, he gambles, and we can maybe take advantage of that?
Well, we felt like we could take advantage of any quarterback. Prior to the Super Bowl, we had faced Kurt Warner. We had chances and made plays against him. We played Brett Favre, who we know is a gunslinger, is going to give you opportunities to make plays. We looked at the tape and just felt like he didn't have a lot of weapons to get the ball to, so we could take away the majority of the people he wanted to go to. He had Dallas Clark, Pierre Garçon, who was a young receiver at that time, Reggie Wayne. We felt like we could always take away Reggie because we could double or bracket him and limit the amount of people that he could throw the ball to, which in turn would force him to make bad decisions if we applied pressure to him. So that was our game plan going into that week. Did we say that we think or could predict that Peyton Manning was going to make mistakes? No, because he's such a great quarterback, a cerebral quarterback. He pretty much is thinking ahead of you. But we know that if we applied pressure, took away his threats that he wanted to get the ball to, we were able to make plays because he didn't have anywhere to go with the ball.
When Sean Payton at halftime, who was the halftime act? Do you remember?
Well, halftime is outside.
Yeah, who's playing?
No.
You don't know? This is the big moment of your career.
Is it somebody I wanted to see? Was it Janet Jackson? No, it wasn't Janet.
No. It wasn't the boob game. The boob game was like a few years before that.
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I wasn't playing in the biggest game of my career.
I knew I wasn't going to be able to watch it, you know, it didn't matter who
was. You couldn't hear it from the locker
room? Could not hear anything.
Sean Payton walks in. How quickly does he say, we're going to do an onside kick to start the second half?
I think towards the end of his speech, because it was so long. First he came in and said, okay, you guys, we have some time. Relax, get hydrated. And then we just kind of sat around. I mean, some guys kind of looked in, got their iPads out, you know, started watching some movies.
What?
No, I'm
joking. Well, listen.
But that's it. You could actually watch about a 30-minute episode.
Some of the stories I've heard about, like, the meal times at halftime. I'm like, what? That's what you guys are doing at halftime?
You could do a bunch of things. But when he came back and gave his speech, it was more like, okay, we're going to go out here. We're going to, you know, always the same thing, you know, execute. And then towards the end where he said we're going to start off with the name that he gave for it. It was some like maybe Navajo, some type of weird name he gave for the onside kick that we had practiced the entire week and weeks up to that during the playoffs. And he said we're going to go out, we're going to start off the second half with that. And everybody's like, okay, let's go. Did anybody like that, or did anybody think this is not a great idea? No, we were behind our coach 110%. So whatever he said, we were going to follow.
That's awesome. Yeah, that was obviously a great thing. Yep. People forget Super Bowl 30, the Steelers, Cowher called an onside kick that was successful.
The Steelers almost
came back in that game, too. People seem to think that was like the only onside kick that ever worked, but obviously you guys won. That's what distinguishes
you. The only thing
you
remember is the most recent memory. Yeah. You know,
by the way, who do you root for? And then we're talking Riley Cooper here. We got to get to the ugliness here. Who do you root for, though? If the Vikings, the Packers and the Saints are all in the NFC playoffs, who are you rooting for to emerge?
Ooh. As I said, the best memory is the most recent memory, so I'll be going for the Saints, probably, because I have a lot more friends that are still on the Saints team, so I'll be rooting for them.
What do you think about the Vikings' new uniforms?
Are they new? Oh, is it this year they're new, or was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, I did see that. I was just,
Favre in the ugly one that they wore for like 5 or 6 years.
I wore the ugly ones also. But I went to training camp Monday and covered the Vikings. I didn't get a chance to see them, but I heard the training staff say, the equipment guy, excuse me, that they had new uniforms. And they liked them. I didn't get a chance to see them.
They're better than what they have been wearing for the last few years. All right, if we have time, I'd love to hear more about the Vikings. But first, let's talk about this Riley Cooper thing. What's going to be here now, practically? I am offended. Maybe I don't think it really makes me much of a cynic. I may be a cynic in general, but in this case, I find it offensive. Obviously, Riley Cooper is offensive, you know, throwing the word around. But beyond that, I don't like this sort of institutionalized thing of, like, obviously somebody in the Eagles said, now, look, you got to make an apology. Here's what you need to say. We're going to get you help. You got to go for counseling. I mean, what do you think about it? To me, that's how. Wait, Riley Cooper's going to be told, like, hey, racism is wrong and here's why. Or, hey, you're not a racist if we're going to operate under that delusion that, this is the first time he's ever said that. Mm-hmm. Even if you buy that, what are they going to tell him? Like, hey, we're going to counsel you. Like, this is why you shouldn't say that word. What do you make of all?
You know, I think it's more of the process of trying to let him or teach him what he said and how big of an impact that it was. And, you know, culturally, you know, in the community, socially, that is part of that healing process. Okay. If we've seen the guy, knows that he did something and said something wrong, and he's taking steps to hopefully ensure that it does not happen again. I understand what you're saying, that we're not going to change a guy that's about 25 years of age, who he is where he is right now, and he has developed into the person that he's going to be for the rest of his life. But this is just part of the process, and something how he's paying his diligence back, his due diligence, saying, okay, I know I did something wrong. I'm going to go and get counseling for that. Will it change him as a person? I would guess that it would not, but that's the same thing that you do anyone that might be convicted of something. They always have a period of time in which they go and have to, you know, do a counseling, talk to people so that they can ensure or try to ensure that they don't make the same mistakes over again.
It's, you know, again, yes, I am cynical. I do think that it's, you know, it's not the panacea. It doesn't make Riley Cooper as a human being. But besides that, it's at least a start for people to be reminded. Same thing as Paula Deen a couple months ago. You can't snap your fingers and say, hey, Paula Deen, don't be racist. Hey, everybody who's racist, cut that out. Mm-hmm. At the very least, though, if it curbs the use of words like that, it's at least a small step. So at least in general, that's a good thing. And as a fan, you mentioned if you're convicted of something. I'm not conflating Riley Cooper with what Aaron Hernandez is accused of. Mm-hmm. As a fan, it raises a bunch of questions about, like, who are you going to root for? Who are you rooting for? Are these human beings that you want to be like, yeah? And there are a lot of fans
right.
who are like, as long as they win, I don't care. Uh-huh. I kind of am not that way. I don't want to get up on Mount Pius. But as a player now, practically, before we get to games when he's actually playing other teams, what about the locker room now? We're hearing Shady McCoy. We've seen other guys say things like, this is not over with. The Eagles can say whatever they want.
Right.
This is a legitimate issue. Let's say it's you. Would you go up to Riley Cooper and be like, what the hell? Would you punch him? Would you be like, hey, we're going to be cool. We're teammates. Mm-hmm. How do you treat that?
It would definitely change my outlook on him as a person. No doubt. I would look at him differently. You know, I knew it was going to be players that were going to come out. Initially, they talked to Michael Vick, and I knew the stance that Michael Vick was going to take because of things he's gone through. And also, he wanted to keep that team chemistry together. But I knew once this kept going day after day and we started to talk to other players, some people were going to let their true feelings express their true feelings of displeasure and what he said, because there are so many different things culturally with the plight of certain cultures, whether it's African American community, whoever it might be. And there are so many underlining effects of what people have gone through in their lifetime that when they see someone come out and use this word and in the way he used it, the context in which he used it, I think is probably the most appalling thing. You know, I've been around, you know, several different type of races and have heard people use that term. Sometimes they use it in an endearing fashion. Sometimes they use it in a demeaning fashion. When I watched that video, how he used it was very degrading and very demeaning. And he was confronted. And we know once you're confronted, you're going to say whatever you want to say to try to affect the person that you're confronted with. And your true feelings and your true expressions are going to come out. So people, I'm not the only one that's thinking this. Guys in the locker room have these same type of sentiments. So you can understand that guys like Shady McCoy, when they say this is not over with yet, other players that are going to have problems having Riley Cooper in their locker room, when they see him day after day, they're not going to look at him as, okay, this is a guy that might catch touchdown passes for us. They're going to look at him as a racist because of what he said.
Yeah, I understand. And the Eagles, I guess rightly, are the coaches are reportedly saying, hey, team first. This is all about the team and what we're trying
to build.
What are you
going to
do?
That.
Right, they have to.
Yes.
They have to spin it in that fashion. But, you know, are the players – how about in practice? Are they going to – are the secondary guys going to try to belt him in practice?
Well, I don't know about all that. Maybe in a game, someone from the opposing team might do that. It all depends on the relationship that he has with the players on his team now. And that can kind of be the deciding factor on whether or not they take shots at him. But as far as the team, I know the coaching staff is not going to allow that to happen. I think the team, in order for them to want to win games, they're not going to look at this and say, okay, now we're not going to worry about winning games. We're going to try to take this guy out, regardless if he's a teammate or not. I don't think that's going to be the case.
Well, let me ask you about that. Do you think that the position coach says the first practice after this, does he get the defenders together and say,
no,
listen, if I see anybody headhunting on Riley Cooper, there are going to be repercussions.
You know, I don't know the position coach, so it's hard for me to say. I don't know him personally to say what he might do. I would assume, I don't know if that will be brought up in the discussion. Regardless of if a coach tells you that, a player still has his can do things on his own. You know, I don't think they can say, okay, if we see you taking a shot on Riley Cooper, we're going to fine you. You know, it can be within the context of the game and the context of a practice that he might try to, you know, kind of have his eye to where Riley Cooper might be and say, okay, I'm going to get this guy if I see him coming to my area. And then, you know, how do you say that's not football, just being football, or is that because of what he said? So it's going to be a lot of interesting factors in that, but
it is going to be interesting, like you say. I mean, when they play regular, well, actually in the preseason, and as you get into the regular season, Can you practically, you know, we always hear about, you know, Jack Tatum and those old Raiders, you know, the 70s headhunting guys. How can you practically decide, I'm going to hurt this guy? I'm going to really, you know, I know you're with the Saints and all, the whole bounty scandal. Can you target a guy and say, yeah, when you get a chance, let's put a lick on this guy, this aggro white guy with the ponytail who uses that word? Let's really teach him a lesson.
No, it's too tough to do that and say prior to the game, pregame, that during this game, we're going to try to take this guy out. You never know what situation the guy's going to be in. You don't know if he's going to be playing. You don't know if he's just going to run, you know, deep routes the entire game. So it's too tough to say, okay, we're going to try to take a shot and take this guy out. It's just too difficult within the framework of a football game because so many things are happening. If you're worried about one receiver and trying to take him out, it's going to be other receivers that are going to blow right past you. So you're going to end up you're not playing your best game if you're so focused in on one player. You have to really pretty much just worry about the game plan, worry about doing whatever you need to do to win that game. But, you know, it might be some words said, some words exchanged from player to player, and guys voicing their displeasure to him. They might – I know I can guarantee some defensive backs will say something to him and will have a type of thought process about him when they're going up against him and say, okay, this is the guy that I heard, you know, in the video clip say these words. So my blood might be a little hotter when I'm facing this guy than it would be facing somebody else.
It's going to be interesting, the PR repercussions once you get into the season. If somebody, if a black DB really lays a really harsh lick on Riley Cooper. Let's say he gets.
But it's too tough to say that that's because of.
Well, that's going to be the issue, though. You know? But I mean, that's going to. You know, listen, they already levy fines and all that sort of stuff. What is. Imagine now, Darren Sharper puts a lick on Riley Cooper, and then the league fines you for it, or, you know, as they typically would. Then there's going to be a discussion whether it's deserved or not. People are going to then ask you, hey, did you do that? Was that motivated because of what he said? And are you then the NFL, in a weird way, will be demonized. Like, well, listen, he's doing something that a man would do. A man steps up and defends what he thinks is a fair.
We're going outside the box.
Well,
now,
this is going to have you wait and see.
The first guy who does that to him is going to have to answer
those questions.
You know, we're talking weeks down the road here, and you know, how fresh it's going to be in these defenders' minds, we don't know. And to say they're going to just definitely go after this guy.
I didn't say they're definitely going to.
I'm saying if,
the reporters. No, the reporters will ask him, did you hit him? Was there something more behind that hit? He's going to have to answer it.
They're going to have to answer it, but that's an empty question because all they're going to say is, no, I'm just playing football. Same thing as when you get fined for a hit that's deemed illegal, and then you go in front of the people that are, you know, judging on whether or not they're going to fine you or not, the committee. And you say, I'm just playing within the framework of the game. You know, the whistle is still going on. I was trying to just play my game, play football, play tough and physical. And they say, well, we think you're a little bit, you know, a little bit on the outside edges of these rules by this hit. This is going to be the same thing when they talk about if someone takes a shot at Riley Cooper. So it's going to be too tough.
It's going to be a tough.
And it's going to always be objective and subjective to see whether or not.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's going to be interesting that when they're considering levying a fine, they're going to say, listen, we might get a little bit of blowback for doing this to that DB if we fine
him. No,
because
they'll say that's always in the safe, trying to promote the safety of the game. And that's going to be their go-to.
Would you,
as it should be,
if you were with the Eagles brass, would you say we should maybe get rid of this guy? Because it's going to be hard for us to build the team, the brotherhood.
I definitely would. And the thing that was brought up to me was, you know, not necessarily what he said and how it affected the black community, but let's say he says any type of, whether it's any type of racial slur towards any other type, whether it would be Jewish, whether it could be Hispanic, whether it could
That's not going to be much of an issue in the NFL.
Well, no, I'm saying
there are not very many Jewish guys.
The owner of the Eagles is Jewish. That's would there be a different type of repercussions if that was said? So it's interesting to me.
Wow, that's a really great point. Wow, that's fascinating.
If that was said, but in my opinion, yeah, I would have to.
You're so right. If he would have said,
if I was general manager, I would have to get him off the team because I'll be worried too much about team chemistry.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, I think that, on like you say, they have to, so the coaching staff has to spin it in a certain direction because they're now, whatever, 3 weeks, 4 weeks away from kickoff of the regular season, a new era with Chip Kelly and all that. But if Jeremy Maclin didn't get hurt, though, I bet you they would get rid of him.
Or if he was a guy that was putting up 1,000 yards a season, would they think about getting rid of him? I don't think so. But now, kind of a guy that's on the bubble, does this affect him making this football team? So we'll see if he's even on the Eagles when it comes to regular season game one.
Just to jump in, there were reports that he could have ended up being the number two with Maclin being out. So I wonder how this affects
this. Well, that's exactly right. It's like I say with
Well, I know the Eagles need as many receivers as they possibly can get. So
right.
He probably will have a good shot of making it.
Well, one thing that has proven that you and the other guys who we talk with when we do this Inside Out segment is one thing that has been proven not to be a myth, but is as important as anything, like you say, is team chemistry and that feeling of brotherhood in the locker room and letting go of whether it's even somebody who's been charged with, you know, felonies and all that kind of stuff, is letting all that stuff go and being the team and everything. This to me is, I again, I'm not comparing it with being, you know, with felonies and, you know, violent crimes and anything. But it's dumb, one, right? It's just dumb to be going through the 21st century and thinking that that's acceptable and you're not going to get busted with cell phones and everything else. But beyond, it just indicates stupidity as an individual. But beyond that, now in the locker room, it just seems like you should get rid of him for football reasons, not to make a pious stand, because, like you say, practically now, who's going to want to play with this guy?
One thing also, too, that I want to make a comment, I don't want to hear about the compassion that he showed and the fact of what he said, because this happened a month ago. So if you really have compassion and are really distraught over what you did, you say that you bring this up the next day to your head coach and say, Coach, there's a situation that I got caught in that might come into the public eye of me saying something that could be caught on video. So is he upset that he said what he said, or is he upset that he got caught?
Yeah, of course. And these scripted answers, these scripted statements that they make, it's just so phony, and it's for whose benefit? That's what who's fooled by that? Nobody. So we're all adults, and we know that he said something stupid, something he probably believes, and even if he doesn't deep down believe it, what do we need that PR nonsense for? This spin of, like, I deeply regret, and of course it betrays who I am in my heart. Oh, listen,
it's all part of the process.
You're a racist.
Though, damn it, it's part of the process.
All right, listen, Darren Sharper, it's always a delight. A handsome devil, and he's got a good brain on the inside of that that beautiful puss. We'll continue to enjoy your work on NFL Network. Scram now, fella.
Yes, I'm gone.
All right, let's do more Inside Out, though. You see, it's a good segment there, Black Tie. Hard hitting. There goes Darren Sharper. What do you think, Black Tie?
Good stuff, man. Darren knows what he's talking about.
When
someone in here who's knowledgeable about the game. It's great.
I think that stinks that you say that to me. I know what I'm talking about, too. I didn't say some interesting things.
No, I'm just messing around with you. It was, obviously what Cooper did was dumb, like you said. It's just the stupidity of a man thinking that he could, for one, get away with it if you're in public. In today's day and age, it's like, okay. But it shows, right.
And you can debate. It's almost moot. Listen, on a larger scale, when you transcend the guy and his stupid remark, it. I don't want to get again. I don't want to send up on Mount Pius, but at least there's something, a learnable moment, as President Obama calls it, or a teachable moment. See, I don't even say. I guess I'm not. I'm not much of a sponge when it comes to learning. But anyway, learning or teachable moment, either way. Yes, this is another reminder. How dumb can you be? You know, you're an adult and you're running around talking like that in 2013, whatever you get, you deserve, fella. But besides that, maybe it helps other people. And if you, again, you're not going to make people not racist by telling them, stop being racist. Cut that out. Or go, let's go for counseling for a week or two. Yes, just like the San Diego mayor is going to his bizarre approach with women. Yes, we'll just teach, or Tiger Woods. Yes, we'll take away whatever ills you have with a week or two of counseling. Ridiculous. But but like you say, yes, I don't know. I was interested that Sharper, this close to the season, he gets it from a football player, from a professional football player's perspective, that the team would, it would be a major loss to have a guy this close kicked off the team right when you lose Jeremy Maclin. I find it intriguing that he agrees that, yes, you get rid of this guy because it's going to corrupt the locker room.
Yes, and a lot of reports are coming out of Philly. Jeff McClain is a beat writer for the Eagles, and he just put up an article about how the locker room is seemingly divided over this issue, and who knows, it might get worse. So, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a potential implosion. The one question I didn't get to ask Sharper that I wanted to is whether a PR guy has ever written an apology for Sharper or for one of his teammates. That's a question I'd love answered because those things are so phony in general. When, first of all, Ben Roethlisberger, when he, you know, got charged the second, well, he didn't get charged. And for the record, he's never been charged with a crime. People like to point that out. When he gave that, you know, sort of like a shrug, and then the Steelers got to him and said, listen, fella, your behavior is ridiculous. And then he gave that formal press conference. And it was like, well, all we know is that Ben Roethlisberger didn't say this. He read it, but he didn't write these words. Obviously, we've heard him interviewed. Yeah.
It's just what society accepts. I mean, look at Twitter, for example. Like, whenever someone tweets something dumb, the go-to is, oh, my Twitter got hacked. It's like the usual response that we all know isn't true, but for some reason, there's a part of society that I guess that believes or buys that sort of stuff, so like they have to do it. They feel obliged.
Well, what's interesting to me too, and then we'll get Dan Hanzus up here to talk about some lighter subjects. But like I mentioned, you know, when you get outside the locker room from a fan's perspective, everybody has a sort of a gallows humor about these sorts of things. You know, not everybody, but there's a section of fans that'll tweet at me, you know, with me being not hiding the fact that I'm a Steelers fan. If a Steeler gets into any sort of trouble, I'll get a lot of tweets from strangers. Ha ha! We're like, what? It's funny that this guy. But that there is that sort of back and forth now with this. And as an organization, like we said when the Aaron Hernandez thing went down, when the charges were made against him, you have to give the Patriots organization credit for handling it about as well as they could. I think they kicked him to the curb very quickly and distanced themselves from him. And again, a racist crack is not the same as the charges that Hernandez has been charged with. But the Eagles also have to, from a PR standpoint, just like they did with Mike Vick, have to then think about the fact that the way they're going to be regarded if they retain this guy, that they're carrying this guy on their team. It's a lot to consider with the Eagles. And Sharper, what a great point that is. You know, the Eagles owner is Jewish. What if it was an anti-Semitic crack? I guarantee you, you're right. Or Sharper's right. Riley Cooper wouldn't be on the team today. All right, listen. We can flap our gums about this grim subject. I'm sure everyone under the sun has been talking about it for the last 48 hours. So we'll leave it alone for now and move on to some other stuff with our old pal from around the league.
You're listening to Dave.
All right, here he is, everybody, back in the seat. He, like his cohort from around the league, I feel like has become a little bit of a fancy pants himself. He's too busy doing his own podcast these days. You can find it on iTunes. It's the Around the League podcast, three times a week even. And it's him, it's Rosenthal, it's Mark Sessler, the aforementioned Fancy Pants, the original Mr. Fancy Pants there, talking about this, that, and the other, augmenting their already stellar work at NFL.com, around the league site, you know, all the news, whether it's good, bad, or ugly, like Riley Cooper and his remarks earlier this week. It's Dan Hanzus. What's the poop, fella?
What's the poop? There isn't a lot of poop right now, but I will tell you this. First of all,
there isn't. It seems like every 4 minutes there's big news.
There's actually a solid amount of poop. But Chris Wessling is also part of the podcast.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Chris Wessling. At some point, we got to get him up here.
But I do want to say, while I'm here, because I haven't been here in a little while,
yeah,
that I speak on behalf of Mark. Thank you very much for giving us the platform initially on the Dave Damashek football program that has now spun into its own Joni Loves Chachi type thing on the Around the League podcast.
Let's hope it's more Laverne and Shirley than Joni Loves Chachi if we're talking Happy Day spinoffs. All right, fella, let's kibitz about a couple of things here. First of all, what did you think about the Pro Bowl announcement earlier in the week. Kamish Gadal, his heart is in the right place. He's trying to salvage this game. Like your pal Wessling mentioned in a little post that he did for Around the League, it sort of misses the real problem with the game, which is that the players don't want to be in it, and I don't blame them, because in a contact sport, listen, this isn't the baseball all-star game where you're not going to wind up getting ruined, you know, unless you're Atlee Hammaker mentally. You probably are too young to even remember Atlee Hammaker, right, Hansen?
I do not remember.
You don't
Atlee.
Get that reference?
No, that one was
he
a
was a
deep.
Giants pitcher who I think it was 1983 was the starting pitcher for the National League and got shelled.
Yeah.
In the first inning, and never was right again. Never. Well, I mean, it just destroyed him emotionally to the extent that he was not the same guy ever again.
That's depressing. Although the one that you usually hear is Roy Fossey, the old catcher that got run over by Pete Rose and blew out his shoulder and was never the same after that.
Ray Fossey. That was a physical
yes,
injury,
Ray.
But that happens rarely. But football, I don't blame these guys. I threw out, and look it up, NFL.com/Shek, S-H-E-K. I posted my alternative. Now, if you've listened to this podcast before, then you've probably heard me flap my gums about this. This is a longstanding but gangbusters idea. I say, let's do away with it, and the Pro Bowl, and then replace it with the Loser Bowl. The Loser Bowl would be played between the two worst teams in the league. The winner gets the first overall pick in the draft upcoming, and you play it out on some burnt out junior high field. You get the worst band you can find, the worst rock band in the world to play the halftime
Stained.
Show. Stained! Yeah. That's a good option. I said Eve 6, but I think Stained. That's a good punch up there. How say you on my grand idea, or do you think this new Pro Bowl idea
no.
works?
All right, we'll start with your idea. I think it's brilliant. I said it on the Around the League podcast on Wednesday. I agree that would – see, the biggest fundamental problem with the Pro Bowl, and Wes touched on it, and you have as well, is the competition element of it. Guys aren't going to sell out their bodies and put their careers on the line in the sport of football, where you could play a baseball game hard and not risk your career. Can't do that in the NFL. So – you put the Loser Bowl, changes all the stakes. There would be a lot of, I guess, loops to get through in terms of paying guys an extra salary for another game. I don't know, all those type of things. But who says no to that, really?
I think it's fascinating. And then here's the
detract. It's one of your best ideas.
I once mentioned it to Peter King, and he gave a serious-minded answer to it, and I appreciated
really?
It. He said, here's the problem. What if a guy is the incumbent quarterback, you love your Jets. What if they have a year and somehow Mark Sanchez makes it through as the starting quarterback? What incentive, and they hadn't taken Geno Smith, or maybe Geno Smith reveals himself to be an abject bust.
Right.
So now, a year from now, they're looking for a quarterback again. What incentive does Mark Sanchez have to play well in that game? Well, hey, that's part of the coach's decision then.
Hmm.
That's part of the intrigue. Yeah, listen. Oh, so wait. If I play well and we win this game, I'll give us the first overall pick so you can take Teddy Bridgewater and replace me, kind
right.
of thing?
If you are, and going with the Jets a little further, if the Jets in the 2013 season go 4-12, they're in this game, and you're a linebacker on the Jets, and you have that clowny kid in college, you know, primed as the number one pick.
Ah.
Are you really going to be battling hard to, you know, get to the opposing quarterback when that could be
everybody's
the guy taking your job?
You know, what? And people say, well, that's why you can't do that. I say.
Whatever, though. I'm still in.
I say, so what?
Yeah.
Listen, everything you have to decide. Every game you have to decide. Well, what they do really well is this. Are we still going to? They're the best run-stuffing team in the league, so we better just not run the ball. That's a calculation, a strategic move you have to make. Same thing with this game. It's a great idea.
I love it.
Perpetuate it, would you? Now that you got your own podcast?
I will. I'm
going
to continue to push it. I will push it.
All right. We'll see. I'll listen. The proof will be in the pudding.
Will you?
All right. Now, our main man, Warren Sapp, is getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. The sports car is out there. Take a look at it.
By the way, speaking of the sports car with Warren Sapp, I was very happy to see you survive that. I didn't know if things could have one question all of a sudden you know you're never seen
things
again.
Turn.
I'm very happy that you're back.
Yeah. Now I'm safe and sound. Sapp and I are old pals. You know, like we had a great time as you could see by watching that. In fact, if you watch it, I don't want a spoiler alert, but you know, he even said he's going to get an extra gold jacket for himself so he has one to go through the weekly wear and tear. The other one will stay pristine. He said, well, he's getting that one. He's going to get me one, too.
That's nice of him.
That's awesome.
I'm glad you didn't ask the wrong question. That's all.
Now, listen. Let's talk about another thing. Pro Bowl, a great question that we got from Devin, DTW underscore 94 at Twitter. Let's lose the underscore, people. Our society is better than that.
If your name is Devin, you always do well with ladies, right?
That's yeah, but it's a weird name for a baby. That's a weird baby name. Think about that. You don't want that. You don't want to be Devin the baby. That's hard to sell. But anyway, Devin asked, he said, I got a topic for your next show. Which Hall of Fame class is the best class? I turn that question to you now, Dan Hanzus. What is the best? Go ahead and look them up there at profootballhof.com. You can look them all up there, and I'm looking at them as we speak. Throw it at me here, fella.
Well, the one that jumped out to me, and as we talked about before we went on today, I'm a little younger, so some of the older classes maybe I don't connect with. But the one that jumped out to me immediately was the class of 93. Quality class, we have Dan Fouts, mm-hmm. Larry Little, Chuck Knoll, Walter Payton, and Bill Walsh. That's pretty killer.
I like that one a lot, and here's why. I think you have to give that one a lot of consideration. Yeah, I have that one circled too. Dan Fouts is probably one of the 15 best quarterbacks ever.
Underrated.
Chaz Knoll is slept on a little bit too much, but Chaz Knoll, the emperor who constructed those four Super Bowl teams in the 70s, he's at worst should be he's the fifth best coach, third best coach, fourth, something like that. Bill Walsh is maybe the first or second best coach ever, and Walter Payton's the first or second best running back. That's a tough one to argue with.
The other one that jumped out to me, class of 99, you had Eric Dickerson, Tom Mack, Ozzie Newsome as a player, Billy Shaw, and LT, like that.
LT,
class.
Greatest OLB ever there. Ozzie Newsome, top four tight end of all time. Eric Dickerson, top four running back. Yep, that's a tough one to argue with. Can't say I saw Tom Mack play in his prime, so I can't really weigh in on that one. But that's pretty good. I'm a little younger than you, as you point out, unnecessarily. But I'll tell you, Mel Blunt.
You're younger than me?
I mean older than you, creepo. Here's when you get into the sweet spot if you're a Steelers fan. Yeah, those late 80s, early 90s, you start going, every year you have at least one. But, yeah, you go like 89, Mel Blunt and Terry Bradshaw go in. Art Shell and Willie Wood. What do you think about, by the way? I thought this was interesting. Gil Brandt, the great Gil Brandt, the architect of those Cowboys teams in the 60s and 70s and 80s. He said that the greatest quarterback in the Hall of Fame currently is Roger Staubach. Listen, he's terrific, Brandt, but that's cockamamie, right? Wow. That's homerism. I tweeted back that I would put Montana ahead of him, Marino ahead of him, maybe Bradshaw. I didn't see Unitas play, but all things point to him probably being a superior guy, and Troy Aikman. How say you?
I would put Steve Young ahead of him.
It's a tough one. Yeah, that's
John
close.
Elway's tougher.
Elway, that's who else I had in there. Yeah, Elway I had there.
I think you have to think about him.
Is that right? So you don't agree with
Well, I think Staubach, yeah. I mean, the guy, if the production, maybe the team production over the personal production, but he was, one of the all-time greats. But to say that he's the best, I mean, isn't that basically saying the best quarterback ever is Roger Staubach?
Unless you think that Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, and Gil Brandt does have his affection for Peyton Manning, he holds him up as the best. So I think that probably he'll say Peyton Manning, which throws his opinion sort of, I reject his opinions on QBing, if that's the case. But here, let me throw another one at you real quick.
Include Moore.
Roger Staubach. Raheem, that's right. I forgot you went in the direction of. Oh, by the way, that reminds me, new NFL coming up for you before the season starts, and it does in fact involve Raheem Moore. Thank you for that reminder there. People have been tweeting, when's the next NFL? We got one coming up for you soon, and it involves Raheem Moore. But how about that class of 85? Staubach, Pete Rozelle, the man. Primarily responsible for bringing the NFL into, yes, the Sables deserve a great deal of credit. The 58 championship game, by all accounts, had a lot of influence. But Pete Rozelle, more than anybody else, apparently, is the reason why football is where it is. If you read your NFL history, your pro football history, you'll see that's the case. So Obviously, he's in there. Joe Namath, one of the better quarterbacks ever. People like to say he's overrated, but all right.
Whatever.
He's obviously pretty high up there. And then the Juice, O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, people forget because Juice has so damaged his reputation.
He has? So, why? What's he been up to?
Something happened with a waiter. But with O.J. was
a waiter.
You know, he's one of the greatest players ever, and no one even thinks about that anymore. If you go through his numbers, the statistics he was putting up in 14-game seasons. So that one, actually, that class of 85, probably is tops for me, too, now that I look at it.
And I like talking about – it's funny. Yeah, that 85 one is good. It's funny with the Juice specifically. I like to talk about periodically, if you're a fan of a team, what's the best jersey and the worst jersey to own. Just for cool factor, right, walking around the stadium. And this isn't, hey, if you're a Patriots fan, Tom Brady, because everybody's going to have a Tom Brady, and then you're not special. You want one that's cool, one that threads the needle a little bit. Mm. If you go to Rich Stadium, or I don't know if it has a now sponsored name attached to it up in Buffalo, if you go to that stadium, you're not... Oh, that's right. They did change it to Ralph Wilson. All right. It's fine. Throw it in my face that you know something. So, but listen, if you go to Ralph Wilson Stadium, I'm sure you're not going to see a ton of 32 Simpson jerseys. It's also the worst jersey, though, because it's a stain, obviously.
I think it's a way to stamp yourself as like an individual. It's like when my sister back during the trial in 95 was the only person in my whole family that was saying OJ was innocent. And I think it was like teenage rebellion that she was doing it. And then later she was like, no, he was absolutely guilty.
That's a weird thing to stand
on. It was
a
weird move by Shay.
I'm going to go. I think I got to go 85. Your offerings are well considered, but I think I have to stick with where I started out with there. 1991, the only time a kicker gets in there. Jan Stenerud, along with Earl Campbell, John Hanna, arguably the greatest guard of all time, and Tex Schramm, a significant figure in obviously Cowboys history there. Hey, drop me a line, hashtag at DDFP, and maybe we'll run your results. I'm going to cobble together my list of maybe the top 10 or so. Maybe we could do that on the Round the League. Have one of your organic email debates that you and Rosenthal and Wessling and Sessler. Dude, that maybe you'll invite me on your podcast someday.
That would be awesome, too.
Prima.
By the way.
Who's a who? Dave who? I don't. Oh, yes. I remember him. Yes.
We are on the iTunes page now. You could download and subscribe. Also, we are on the new and noteworthy page on iTunes podcast section. So a lot of excitement over on the spinoff.
And you're the host, huh? You're sort of like the guy who does the ins and outs.
I'm trying to take the reins of the podcast. You know, I'm not sure if there's going to be much of a fight, but so far I've been the one ins and outs guy.
Wow. It's kind of like the battle for the Jets QB spot, isn't it?
Yeah, unimpressive.
Like, well, we have a lot of guys who we could do it. I mean, do we love any of them? I guess let's just go with Hanzus.
Geno Smith in this equation.
That's Rex Ryan in the coach's room. Like, who are we going to go? Sanchez? All right, let's just go with Sanchez. That's how it's going to be. All right, Hanzu, scram. It's time to talk fantasy football. You hear the music. He has now become synonymous with it. He is the voice of pro football fantasy talk, not just here at the NFL Network and NFL.com, but across the land. I'm speaking, of course, about Fantasy Hall of Famer Michael Fabiano. What's the poop, fella?
How's it going, my man?
Well, it's
going well.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to see you. Going better for me than it is for Riley Cooper and for his teammates. And things are also going well for me because I root for a baseball team named the Pittsburgh Pirates. How say you?
And typically, you can't say that.
No,
typically,
I haven't said it since I was a Ute.
Pittsburgh Pirates.
But how do you explain yourself? We're better than your Yankees
and better than the Angels of Adam Rank.
That's true.
Who spent $360 million on three players. I thought of you today. I was on the Double Coverage podcast with Steve Weish, and guess who we interviewed?
Who's that?
Le'Veon Bell.
Ooh.
And he was very good. If you can get him on the Dave Damashek football program, I would
I got to do that. Yeah, that's
advise that. He is very good and had a lot of good things to say. Says that he's a good pass protector and he's picking up the offense, and he hopes that the Steelers utilize him in that dual threat running and receiving.
Well,
I like him.
I'll tell you what, you know, this is something legitimately that I have been forecasting since the end of 2012, or in fact, prior to 2012, I felt that Todd Haley, when he was coming in there, wanted to turn them into more of a running team. And it's not just Todd Haley. I think the hiring was made by the Rooneys to try and achieve that, to get back to, for better or worse, old school Steeler fans really do like that identity of the ground and pound and the good defense and all that. I do think that they're going to do that. We'll talk about Le'Veon Bell and the rest of the AFC North at a later date. Today, let's get into the NFC East. Riley Cooper and company's Philadelphia Eagles.
Right.
Let's talk about those teams. And by the way, if you want to change from this, we can, Fabiano. I defer to you. But last week, you can go back and listen to Fabs, along with Marcus Grant, came in here. And we're going two divisions at a time, working through them. It's just a way to take a look at these. We're trying to give a nice, clean way to look at your fantasy team as you're getting ready to make your draft pick. So we figured let's do two divisions at a time. We're talking about the big names within them. If you have a better approach, so be it. But a couple of people tweeted and said, that makes no sense. I'm not in a divisional fantasy league. We're talking about them in broad terms.
Exactly.
I'm talking about them necessarily.
I'm here for you, Damashek. Whatever you want to do, however you want to format things, I'm here for you, brother.
I like your attitude, and I would like you to talk to Black Tie about mimicking that. What I say goes. You hear? He's in the Fantasy Hall of Fame, and he says whatever you need. You see that, Black Tie? That's the way you need to be. No response, creep.
His mic isn't working.
He's probably Facebooking. Probably. All right, listen. Now let's talk. NFC East, let's talk about, first of all, those Eagles. Mike Vick, I think at the end of the day, he's going to be the starter there.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Nick Foles is a possibility, but I guess until we have a proper announcement, we don't need to indulge it too much. But what do you think about whether whoever is pulling the trigger there, who do you think is the, I mean, do you figure DeSean Jackson can still thrive without Jeremy Maclin out there, or is double coverage going to really bring him down? Because I don't know that I know I don't see him as a true number one.
I don't either.
If there aren't other considerations for a secondary to worry about.
And maybe defenses don't even have to double him. They may be more inclined to load up the box because they're going to run the football so much. But I've never been a big fan of DeSean Jackson from a fantasy perspective. He's a great player. He makes plays on the field, but so inconsistent, and especially over the last couple of years, he's been a guy that you can barely start with any reliability. He's killed you, and it's a good thing that he's going to see more targets now due to the unfortunate injury to Jeremy Maclin, but I'm not moving him up to top 10 or top 20. I say he's a number 3 fantasy wide receiver, and that's it. Until he proves me wrong.
Well, listen, it's really Chip Kelly proving you wrong. And you know, our pal Akbar is very high on what Chip Kelly's going to do with NFL offenses. Mm-hmm. Then again, you talk to guys like Heath Evans who say this is going to be a complete bust. So it's very interesting to see what happens there. As a rule, I'm going to avoid all Philadelphia Eagles with the exception, obviously, of Shady McCoy.
Right.
He figures to have a nice season. Do you figure he is – where do you slot him among running backs this year?
He's definitely top 7. He'll be a first round pick without a doubt. Maybe a top 5 pick in a PPR league.
Well, where are you taking him?
I'm taking him probably 7th, I would say, if I'm in a
seventh.
Standard.
Wow, that's not very impressive.
That's good. 7th out of 192 picks if you're in a
second.
League.
You go Peterson
right
1,
here.
Arian Foster 2, Lynch
3, Rice 4, Doug Martin 5, Charles 6, and McCoy 7. What's wrong with 7?
I don't think Ray Rice has a great year. I think that
everyone's so down on Ray Rice.
I'm not down
for some
on him.
Reason.
I think that Bernard Pierce is going to get a ton of touches this year.
I don't know about a ton. We'll see what
a ton,
happens.
Remember,
that offense now is barren at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no Anquan Boldin. There's no Dennis Pitta. Maybe Rice sees more opportunities out of the backfield as a pass catcher. I still have faith in him. I really do.
Well, obviously, Chip Kelly, if we're looking at what the results were in Oregon, a lot of running backs have had big years. You know, they are featured. I think
Michael James.
Yeah, I think we perceive the Chip Kelly Oregon offense to be all about, you know, guys catching and running. But I think that the running backs, obviously, if you look at the numbers, Shady McCoy is positioned to have a nice
year. You can make
an
argument that Bryce Brown could take just as many touches from Shady as Bernard Pierce from Ray Rice. I just don't see it. I just, especially in Baltimore, I just don't see it.
All right. Dallas Cowboys, Tony Romo. We just had our pal E.H. Elliott Harrison in here.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great Romo-pologists.
The greatest, potentially.
Yeah, maybe. I like Tony Romo, but just strictly from a fantasy perspective.
Mm-hmm.
He is a guy who, this is what I don't like in my fantasy quarterbacks. 1 week he gives me 35, the next week he gives me 11. Tony Romo does that too much in my book. I know at the end of the
down
season
the
you look at the
last
numbers.
And he was good.
I know, but that's the point. So what? And believe me, I had him on my team, so I know how he mm-hmm. plays. He has a good week or two, but then he'll swoon for literally like 5 or 6 weeks, and it's unsatisfying. And then at the end of the year, you look at his numbers, and they do stack up in the top 7 or 8 in fantasy yeah. points. I'm talking strictly. But this is a guy I don't like. What I like the QBs. I like a dependable, you know, low 20s, mid-20s out of the position.
Right. I still think Romo is a top 12 quarterback, and that's because the position is so deep.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
it's unreal deep. Especially this season when you're talking about
I am not touching a
guys
QB.
Like,
everybody.
I know. Let him take him.
Can I tell you another guy? Jay Cutler. I'll take Jay Cutler
like
this year. I think he's going
to
have a good year.
One?
He could be my one. Here's what I'm going
to
do. Here's my strategy.
Than I do.
Here's my strategy this year in general. I think I'm going to not because I usually take a QB, and sometimes I don't even take a backup, and then I just grab one off the waiver wire before the
right.
season starts. This year, I'm going the other way. I think I'm just going to do quantity. I'm going to go try to get a guy like Jay Cutler and a couple other guys, some wild card guys, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to overspend for one because I'm in an auction league for one thing. But I'm not going to reach on any QB. I mean, there's no one who I'm going to go out and get. I'm going to fill up the other positions, and then I'll go worry about
QB.
We
had an auction mock draft that'll be on NFL.com next week, and the quarterback values towards the end of that auction were ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's great. Well, you saw I waited it out, and I got who did I get? I can't remember off the top of my head. We did one. Yeah, it'll be on NFL.com/fantasy
next
soon.
Week. Right.
But yeah, that's what I did. I grabbed, I think, 3 QBs is exactly the approach I took, and I think they're all guys. Maybe Jay Cutler isn't going to work out, but if you go Jay Cutler and say like Sam Bradford or someone like that mm-hmm. and one other guy, one of those guys is going to be productive enough that you could. Oh, I had Eli Manning.
Roethlisberger, Eli Manning.
I got Eli Manning for $2.
Right, and Cutler's on there too. You took like 10 quarterbacks.
All right, well, let's talk about Eli Manning. Oh, well, before we move to Eli, let's round out with the Cowboys. Dez mm-hmm. Bryant. Legit number one receiver
yes.
in fantasy this year, obviously, for the Cowboys as well.
Mm-hmm.
Dez Bryant, where does he slot for you among wide receivers in general?
Second behind Calvin Johnson.
Wow!
Second behind Calvin Johnson. It's very close because Megatron is going to be the first wide receiver drafted
sure.
in every league, unless it's a league of all Cowboys fans, and maybe Dez Bryant will go ahead of him. But you've got A.J. Green mm-hmm. and Dez and Brandon Marshall.
And Brandon, funny.
Those are the top three guys behind Calvin Johnson. Dez is young. I still think he has some ceiling left there after that big year in 2012. So, and Romo's throwing him the football. The Cowboys defense, I don't know how much better it's going to be under Monty Kiffin than it was last year under Ryan. So we'll see what happens. I think the Cowboys are going to score points. I don't know that they're going to be a very good team. That's just the pessimistic Cowboys fan in me. But Dez has got all the upside in the world and all the talent in the world.
You know who might
now
be
he's got
a
his
steal?
Head sort of screwed on straight, too.
Yeah, relatively speaking.
The
guy who I like is DeMarco Murray. I understand major risk. You're a guy who
right.
touted Ryan Matthews for way too long, and I would berate you for doing so.
Yes.
To me,
thanks for reminding me.
DeMarco Murray, though, this is a guy. There's no evidence that Ryan Matthews, if he's healthy, is going to be dynamite. And yet people continue to look at him in that regard. Maybe this will be his year. But at least DeMarco Murray has done it. DeMarco Murray has strung together a stretch that really is enticing. Yeah, Ryan Matthews has never done that. DeMarco Murray, if you build your team around him, you're in trouble.
Yes.
But I definitely think that he's going to slide because of it's not perception, it's the reality that
mm-hmm.
he's always hurt.
Yep.
But I think he maybe slides to the fourth round. Is that realistic to think he
yes.
falls that far?
Third or fourth round, I don't think you'll see him slide any further than the fourth round. But, I mean, Murray is the guy who, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't he hold the single-game record for rushing yards in Cowboys franchise history?
That sounds right, yeah.
253, I believe it was, against the Rams a couple years ago. I mean, Tony Dorsett, Emmitt Smith, there's been some pretty good running backs in Dallas, and he does have all the talent in the world. It's that caveat with him being prone to injuries, and I would caution people out there who think that Joe Randall's going to be his handcuff, because right now it looks like Lance Dunbar's number two on the depth chart.
Mm.
He's outplayed Randall in training camp thus far, and that's going to be something you want to look at because Murray, as we said, has been injury prone. But you're right, Dave. The talent's there. He's just got to stay out of the trainer's room.
All right. Eli Manning, where do you slot him among QBs?
You know, he's dropped down. Last year was a disappointing year for Eli Manning. The year before, remember, he was a pretty good fantasy quarterback. Mm-hmm. It was maybe his best year.
I won my fantasy league a couple years ago with Eli Manning.
I've got him as a high-end, too. He's 13th. It would be great to see Hakeem Nicks stay healthy for an entire season. I think Brandon Myers is going to make a nice impact. The new addition from Oakland at the tight end position.
David Wilson catches balls. I mean, everything points to them throwing the ball a ton.
But again, it's like it's one of those things where the position's so deep that Mike Vick's going to be a number two. We did a draft earlier in the season where we had Romo and Ryan were both backups. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. That's how deep the position is. So a guy like Eli, a guy like Michael Vick, who have been number ones in the past, suddenly they're number twos. And the good thing is that there's a little risk. If you're drafting Eli to be your two or Vick to be your two, you're not leaning on them. And so if they falter, it's not going to kill you as much because you've already drafted a number one quarterback.
And, yeah, if you're an optimist, you know, look, if Chip Kelly is right, Mike Vick is a really interesting gamble.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, he could be obviously the top in the top three at the position. It wasn't that long ago that he was when he emerged back with the Eagles.
Yep.
Remember those numbers. And if you see him sitting there and you're still in need of a backup QB,
I guess I would
reach on him now that I just said I wouldn't go with any Eagles. But if he is the starting QB there. So, yes, I like David Wilson. Who are you taking? Hakeem Nicks or Victor Cruz?
Cruz. But it's because Nicks can't stay healthy. We've even heard rumblings in training camp already about him having some injury issues. And the thing that I like is that he's got a veteran quarterback under center in Eli Manning. He's got a good weapon on the opposite side there, Victor Cruz, so defenses aren't always going to put the coverage towards him. And he's in a contract year.
That's a big one.
He's got it.
Those guys.
He's got to stay on the field and producing the stat sheets, or he's not going to get paid.
Yeah, they magically get very productive in those contract years. I say Hakeem Nicks because, as you know, I'm a fantasy snob. Hakeem Nicks is the superior talent in the real world, and that's why I will always roll the dice.
If he didn't have
Nicks,
if he didn't have the proneness to injury, I'd have him ranked ahead of Cruz too. But they're close.
I got news for you. As I always say, Hakeem Nicks is one of the five best receivers in the NFL. He just is never on the field, but he is the total package there. Lastly, Redskins, RG3. If he looks right, then, of course, we want to jump on him.
Yep.
Otherwise, I think Alfred Morris is a reasonable gamble. I don't think he can reproduce those numbers because they were pretty lofty last year, but I think he's a nice, dependable option.
Mm-hmm.
Any of those pass catchers strike your fancy? Does Pierre Garçon?
I like Garçon. Again, it seems like we have the same topic here. Injury-prone guys.
Yeah.
Garçon, it looks like he's fine now. He had the foot problems last year.
But he doesn't have the pedigree.
On the field,
you know?
He was ridiculously good. I remember destroyed the Cowboys last year on Thanksgiving Day. But you want a sleeper out of that Redskins pass attack? Fred Davis. He's coming off an Achilles. He actually has looked really good in camp. I've seen reports that he doesn't look like he was ever hurt. And he's in a contract year, too. And with the tight end position being an absolute mess this year, Dave.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough one.
We don't know what's going on with Gronkowski. Antonio Gates and Brent Celek have fallen. Aaron Hernandez is no longer in the mix. Dennis Pitt is out for the year. Fred Davis could be a nice late-round sleeper for you at the tight end spot.
All right. Let's now just quickly turn to the AFC West here. There's not a ton, really, to talk about. The Raiders are in the division. That's the reason why you don't have to bother with them. Darren McFadden, I'm officially done with that.
Would you draft him if you can get him as a flex starter, though? I would. If I can get him as a high-end three.
In what round are we talking about?
You're probably going to have to take him in the fourth or fifth.
No, I would not take I would not take McFadden any higher than maybe the fifth round, depending on how things have shaped up ahead of that, maybe. Mm-hmm. The Chargers, I think Phil Rivers is going to, you know, we talked to LaDainian Tomlinson again. You can go back and listen to that one. You know, they are going to throw, they're going to be throwing a lot more high percentage throws than he was the last few years under Norv Turner there. Maybe that spells something for Ryan Matthews. I assume you're finally going to have enough dignity.
Oh, I'm off. I was off the bandwagon.
You're still interested. You still consider him foxy. He's a good-looking woman.
If I can get him as my fourth running back, maybe.
You're one of those ones who keeps hanging in there on like a woman who, she's gained 10 pounds. Yeah, but she still looks pretty good. That's your way with Ryan Matthews.
Not as anything more than a four. I'll take him as a fourth running back. That's it, man.
Where do you slot Gates in among the tight ends?
You know, he's top 12, but he's towards the end of that. And he's
had amazing,
He's had to move up a little bit because of all the injuries and things that are going on at the position, but you can't trust him. Clearly, he's past his prime the last 2 years. he's done nothing but be inconsistent. Last year, he was barely even an option for fantasy owners in a prominent role because he just wasn't producing. He's just like Phil Rivers. Those two guys, their value has really fallen at the same time in tandem.
The Kansas City Chiefs, the OC, says that Alex Smith is the best quarterback in the NFL. Yeah, that feels like hyperbole. Now, I did spend a dollar on him. That's the other guy in our auction draft. I got Alex Smith. This is a guy who has little risk. It's low risk to take him. No one's going to fall all over themselves to get Alex Smith anywhere. And he's going to be running the pistol, essentially. I mean, Chris Ault is the guy who created it.
Right.
He's the guy who coached Colin Kaepernick. In college, now he's there. Listen, Jamaal Charles behind him. Everything says
late round, late round flyer as a two and a potential matchup starter, and he's got the second easiest schedule based on fantasy points at quarterbacks.
But listen, wait, Baldwin? I said John Baldwin.
I want to know what you think of Baldwin this year.
Well, listen,
it looks like he's going to start at least.
Well, he started last year and did nothing. But look, they have talent. Is the point?
Sure.
All over there, Andy Reid, you know, knows how to beat. Look with Donovan McNabb. Why can't Alex Smith do that?
I think he's going to have a good year. I think
he's
the quarterback position. So
you
deep.
Don't think he's a top 12 guy though?
No.
I'm just talking end of the season. I know that you don't want
to. I would say he could get to the top 15.
No. You watch.
But top 12?
Listen to what Damashek tells you now, Fabiana. Yeah. Here's one of my
predictions. A lot of good quarterbacks, man.
Top 10. Top 10 in fantasy points. Jamaal Charles, of course, is dynamite.
He's been drinking whatever Doug Peterson's been drinking.
You definitely want Jamaal Charles in the top five. You're right about that. Like I've said before, I say again to you now, his only problem. Jamaal Charles was having the season he had in the same year Adrian Peterson came back from his knee injury.
Sure.
Look at what Jamaal Charles did.
Over 1,500
Any
yards.
Other year, it would have been, you know, we would have been swooning over what he put together on a bum team. Lastly, the Broncos, Peyton Manning. I'm not too hip on him. He's old. Who knows what's going to happen? You talk about risks. Listen, the guy's an old man now at this point. He's had has a bum neck.
That's a pretty good risk
Where are you
take,
putting
though.
Him? Where are you putting him? Top five?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's top five.
Top what?
I've got Rodgers, Breeze, Manning, Newton, Brady.
All right. Bold.
The receivers he's got is ridiculous. Losing his center will definitely hurt, but they'll make up for it somehow or another. The running back situation, regardless of who
ball.
It is,
they're
going to
be.
Have a running game. I mean, Willis McGahee was past his prime and played pretty well for that team. And even no Sean Marino last year.
I know. And Ronnie Hillman. Well. Everybody's getting too excited about Monty Ball. That's my takeaway.
I still think he's the best back on that team.
He might be, but we don't know. We haven't seen him play yet in the NFL. And, you know, I'm not willing to say definitely you want to make. Some people look at Monty Ball as the number one running back, and I definitely don't.
Really?
I'm not talking about in real life. I'm talking in fantasy. On my fantasy team, I do not want him to be my best running back.
He should be a flex starter.
All the rookies, like Le'Veon Bell. You watch. Bell's going to have a big
but
year.
You draft him as a three, right? You draft him as a three. You draft Ball
as
a three.
I'm taking
Lacy
him as
a
two.
Three. Okay.
I'm taking Bell in the third round.
Listen, I like him. Third round?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
You wait. We'll see. I'm going to do that.
You're going to get him because I'm not going to take him in the third round.
You really don't think anybody's going to go for a guy who's the clear cut three down back?
Not in the third round.
All right. How do you give me last thing? Rank for me the order that you're going to draft the Broncos pass catchers.
Well, Demaryius Thomas is number one, dude. Listen.
Second round or third round?
Second round, number one fantasy wide receiver. Top eight, no doubt about that. Two, I'm going Welker. And three, I'm going Decker. And Welker and Decker are both going to see their fantasy production decline compared to what they did last year. There's no doubt about that. Decker had, 13 touchdowns? That's not happening again. Welker's not having 100 catches. So as long as you draft these guys based off of what they're projected to do and not what they did last year as twos, I think you're in good shape.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Eric Decker's the second best.
You think so?
If your league values touchdowns, then you want Decker because Decker is 6'3". Even if he doesn't catch as many balls overall, his area of expertise is at 6'3" and those terrific hands. He is a great red zone
Peyton
target.
Peyton loves to throw those slot receivers, though, man. He loves to throw to those slot receivers. Loves it.
All right. Listen, I think
Decker will score more touchdowns than Welker.
All right.
But yardage and receptions, I think Welker gets the nod there.
All right. I'm going Decker over, but I agree with you about Demaryius Thomas.
Yeah, love him.
All right. Fabiano, it's an exciting time of the year. It's like I always say, just as April is the tax man's busy season, this is Fabiano's busy season. And make sure you check out at NFL.com/fantasy The Genius.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. The Genius is unbelievable. A new fantasy football community. Get your fantasy questions answered in real time right then when you post it by millions and millions of fantasy football fans just like yourself. I sounded like a commercial there. See what they do? They drill all the products into
my
head,
Dave. You condescend to me when you say just like yourself. You're calling me a fan. I'm an expert, sir. Well, I'm not. All right. I haven't won my fantasy league in more than...
You do just fine.
I do fine because I... Going to take Levy and Bell. I'm going to have a good 2013. All right. Michael Fabiano, as we approach kickoff for the regular season, we'll continue to yap with him. And, of course, you can find him kibitzing about this, that, and the other when it comes to fantasy at NFL.com/fantasy. Thanks, Fabiano.
Thanks, brother.
What a pleasure. All right. And with that, I think that's the end of what was a very full and rangy show from Hanzus to Sharper to Fabiano. One big happy NFL family. I don't care what Riley Cooper tries to do to drive a wedge between us. We are a family, like I say. We'll be back with more Hooey and Applesauce for you next week. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.